ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। यदि न समुद्धरन्ति यतयो रिद्धि कामा जाटः दुराधिगमः असताम रिद्धि गतः असमृता कंठ मणि आसु त्रिपा योगिनाम उभयतः अपि असुखम भगवान अनपगता अंतकात अंतकात अनाधिरुद्ध पदात भवतः। यदि न समुद्धरन्ति यतयो रिद्धि कामजता दुराधिगामो सताम हृदिगतो स्मृत कंठमणि असुत्रिपयोगिनाम भयतो अपि असुखम भगवान अनपगतांतगाद अनिरुद्ध पदाद भवतः। यदि न समुद्धरन्ति यतयो रिद्धि कामजटा दुराधिगमो असतम रिद्धिगतो स्मृतिकंठमणि असुत्रिपयोगिनाम भयतो अपि असुखम भगवान् अनापगान्तगताड् अनाधिरुद्ध पदाद् भवतः। यदि न समुद्धरन्ति यतयो रिद्धि कामजटा दुराधिगमो असताम रिद्धि गतो स्मृतिकंठमणि असुत्रिपयोगिनाम भयतो अपि असुखम भगवन् अनपगतांतगटाद् अनादिरुद्ध पदाद् भवतः। यदि न समुद्धरन्ति यतो हृदि कामजटा दुराधिगमो सताम हृदि घटो स्मृतिकंठमणि असुत्रिपयोगिनाम भयतो अपि असुखं भगवान् न समुद्धरन्ति यतयो रिद्धि कामजटा दुराधिगमो असतम रिद्धि गतो स्मृतिकंठिमणि असीत्रिपयोगिनाम भयतोऽपि सुखं भगवान् अनपगान्तगताद् अनिरुद्ध पदाद् भवतः। यदि न समुद्धरन्ति यतयो हृदि कामजटा दुराधिगमो असतम हृदि गतो स्मृतकंठमणि असुत्रिपयोगिनाम भयतो अपि
ప్రతిరుద్ధ. లేడీస్ ఓకే, యది ఇఫ్ నా సముధరంతి ది డు నాట్ అప్రూట్ యతయ పర్సన్స్ ఆఫ్ ద రినౌండ్ ఆర్డర్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్ రిద్ది ఇన్ దియర్ హార్ట్స్ కామ ఆఫ్ మటీరియల్ డిజైర్ జటాహ ద ట్రేసెస్ దురదిగమ ఇంపాసిబుల్ టు బి రియలైజ్డ్ అసతాం ఫర్ ద ఇంప్యూర్ రిద్ది ఇన్ ద హార్ట్ గత హ్యావింగ్ ఎంటర్డ్ అస్మృత ఫగాటన్ కంఠ ఆన్ వన్స్ నెక్ మణి a jewel asu their life heirs tripa who gratify yogi nam of practitioners of yoga ubhayatah in both worlds api even asukham unhappiness bhagavan o personality of godhead anapagata not gone away antakat from death anadhiruddha unobtained padat whose kingdom bhavatah from you. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Members of the renounced order of life who fail to uproot the last traces of material desire in their hearts remain impure, and thus they do not allow them to understand you. Although you are present even in their hearts, for them you are like a jewel worn around the neck of a man who has forgotten it is there. O Lord, those who practice yoga only for sense gratification must suffer punishment both in this life and the next from death, who will not realize them, and from you, whose kingdom they cannot reach. Purport. A mere show of renunciation is not sufficient to gain a person entrance into the kingdom of God. One must undergo a thorough change of heart, symptomized by a complete lack of interest in the self-destructive habits of sense gratification, both gross and subtle. Not only must a true sage refrain from even thinking of illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication and gambling, but he must also give up his desires for reputation and position. Altogether, these demands add up to a formidable challenge. But the fruits of true renunciation in Krishna consciousness are well worth a lifetime of endeavor. In the Muntaka Upanishad 3.2.2 confirms the statements of this verse, Kaman yaha kamayate manyamanaha sakarmabhi jayate tatra tatra. Even a thoughtful renunciant, if he maintains any worldly desires, will be forced by his karmic reactions to take birth again and again in various circumstances. Philosophers and yogis work hard to become free from birth and death, but because they are unwilling to surrender their proud independence, their meditations are devoid of devotion to the Supreme Lord. And thus they fall short of the perfection of renunciation, which is pure love of God. This pure love is the only goal of a sincere Vaishnava, and therefore he must vigilantly resist the natural temptations of profit, adoration, and distinction, and also the impulse to merge into an all-consuming impersonal oblivion. As Rupa Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami states in his Bhakti Samar Sindhu 1.1.11, Anya Bilashita Shunyam
ज्ञान कर्मादि अनावृतम अनुकूल्येन कृष्णानु शीलनम भक्तिरुत्तमा.
When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action, the devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. For those who undergo rigorous yoga discipline only to please their senses, prolonged suffering is inevitable. Hunger, disease, the degeneration of old age, injury from accident, violence from others, these are few of the limitless varieties of suffering one can experience to various degrees in this world. And ultimately death awaits, followed by painful punishment for sinful activities, especially those who have freely indulged in sensual enjoyment at the cost of others' lives, can expect punishment so severe is inimaginable. But the greatest pain of material existence is not misfortune in this life or being sent to hell after death. It is the emptiness of having forgotten one's eternal relationship with the personality of Godhead. Srila Siddha Swami prays, Dambanyasa Nishina Vanchita Janam Bhogai Chintaturam Samyuhyantam Aharnisham Virachito Dyoga Klamir Alukam Agna Langinam Ajnam Ajajanata Samanasan Madan Dinanatha Dayanidhan Paramananda Prabho Pahimam. The hypocrite who cheats himself by pretense of renunciation thinks only of sense gratification and thus suffers constantly. Bewildered day and night, he is overwhelmed by exhausting endeavors he contrives for himself. This fool disobeys your laws and is corrupted by greed for respect from other fools. O protector of fallen, O bestower of mercy, O supremely blissful master, please save that person, myself. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhamnitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We are reading from Canto 10, Chapter 87, Text 39, the praise of the personified Vedas. Text 39. Even though the verse seems a little difficult to understand, Yet the purport has been beautifully illustrated. And therefore we have some means to meditate on the purpose of the verse. Some interesting understandings and realizations are shared by the writers here. What seems to stand out is a phrase, thorough change of heart. That seems to be something which is very striking. When we come into the fortunate company of those people who are desiring to purify the consciousness, the process of devotional service, that is the time when the change starts. Before that, there is no change. It is just the same old story. Philosophically, it is called as chewing the chewed. Prahlad Maharaj talks about that. Before we come into contact with illustrious Vaishnavas, it is the same old thing. Nothing really changes actually. What changes is our species, but the inner mentality has not gone. Therefore, in that sense, nothing has really changed. After so many lifetimes, the soul keeps wandering aimlessly. Nothing actually really changes for him. Because whether he is wearing a dog's shirt or a kangaroo's shirt or wearing an earthworm's shirt or pant, his mentality is the same. Right? So, the first beautiful changing event, a milestone event, which happens in everyone's life, who comes to the path of bhakti, is that the change actually starts. And this is a change for the eternal better. It starts, of course, first with change of food. And jivadav. Jivadav. The Shastra says jivadav. Start with the jiva. Adav means the beginning, the first. What seems to start first is the change of food. Suddenly, the person is exposed, and there are so many graphic examples of our movement where people who are used to such indescribable, abominable, inimaginable food habits are suddenly exposed to a variety of cuisine which breaks the wildest imagination, and they get connected to Krishna through food. Right? Prabhupada called it our secret weapon, Krishna Prasadam. In fact, we are almost called as the kitchen religion. So our and kitchen religion is beautiful understanding of Krishna consciousness, because the kitchen is a place of Srimati Radharani. It's a place where she actually resides. Because her primary service to the Lord is to feed him varieties of food. And they say, and it must be true, that she has never repeated any preparation for Krishna since time immemorial. Now we eat khichdi every, I think they have turns, right? And every Thursday they have khichdi, every Friday they have idli, every Saturday they may have poma, every Sunday they may have, you know, upma. So we practically go through something like that. But in the spiritual world, since there is a limitless variety of things, and Radhana's desires are unlimited, Krishna's desire to enjoy are unlimited, so match with those unlimited desires, Radharani cooks the variety of foods which are never repeated. But the fact remains that we are in the kitchen religion. Therefore, what changes first is our food, actually, is it not? We seem to like that. And there are so many devotees who may have got connected through food. There were devotees from Dadar, you know, I think Mahajan Prabhu and others, we know the story. They were staying at Dadar and they came here only because there was free food on Sunday. They didn't even care to know what's happening on the first floor. For several weeks, I don't know, for several months, they were only interested in what's happening in the ground floor. So they would come at the right time, eat food. They didn't know it was prasad. It was food for them because it was obviously tasty. In those days, our temple was more liberal in making, you know, beautiful items. Now we are more conservative, you know, for important reasons. But that time the food was far more delicious, fanciful, variegated. And only after having consumed that prasad for a good amount of time, there was a little bit of change of heart. They got curious to know what's happening on the first floor. So then they came to the first floor and then what we call as the higher taste developed. They say even Steve Jobs, the illustrious, legendary person in the technological world, he had his meals at the ISKCON centers, right? When he was not the one who became, he became afterwards, right? So many people, small and big, have become connected to Krishna consciousness through the first thing in their life was a change of food. As that happens, further change is going to happen. Because now you are connected with the factor of mercy. Prasad means mercy. So mercy makes things change. It is the kripa of the Lord which actually creates further changes in the life of a person. And gradually his other part of his tongue changes, which is his language changes. Mataji, Prabhuji. So he may not really understand what he's saying, but you know, he knows that the person who's serving the food there, he used to be called as Prabhuji. And if somebody's saying the lines of Mataji, jara baju pe ho jao, you know. So he knows that this is the words now. This is not, you know, say Behenji, Bhabiji. Some different words they use. So the words change. So then that change. Then you say Hari Bol. Like in the hospital, right? Bhakti in the hospital. And every ward boy is called as Hari Bol. We don't know how it happened, but every person of diverse religions, there are Sikhs, Muslims, all varieties of religion coming to the hospital. But for them, the ward boy is not a bhau, a mama. You know, then different words they use in different hospitals. But in Bhakti hospital, it is Hari Bol. Jara patient ka, oh, saaf karo, jara oh, ulti kiya usne, whatever, something. So then Hari Bol. So language changes automatically just by that small change. The food is there and the language changes. So these are some of the changes which happen. Language changes. And beginning, of course, we go deeper, we start chanting Krishna's name. The dress changes thereafter. Right? When we understand that, oh no, I cannot wear these fancy shirts and fancy jeans pant to the place which is devotionally surcharged. I should be wearing something which is more in line with the mood of the place. You don't go to the church wearing shorts. I don't know. Maybe they don't. I don't know. I have not gone to a church for a long time. So, but a place of worship, you know. In some of the places you go to, there are Muslim places, you know, in Delhi and all, you go, in South India, you go with that dress. And they will write in some places, please do not wear this type of attire when you enter here. They will give you either lungi or upper garment or this. And if you have a different attire, then they may even actually change it. In Abu Dhabi, there is a mosque, a very famous mosque. So when anybody goes there, the women, they're supposed to change into a burqa, no matter what their religion they're practicing. So every lady goes with a burqa there, right? And because it is a tourist place, nobody really minds that because, you know, yeah, it's like a new experience, you know, wearing some, and they take a photograph in the burqa and like that. But the fact of the matter is that dress changes. We start wearing the dhoti, the kurta, the women understand, oh, they cannot wear, you know, flashy, sensual clothes anymore. that's something which they become the thing of the past. And then they start covering their head, and they wear more, you know, decent dress, which is in line with people who are practicing spirituality, because they don't want to be in focus. They're not coming here to attract themselves. They're coming here to get attracted to the all-attractive. So then the dress changes, and everyone wears a sober dress, which is not going to, you know, catch attention, because everyone wants to be focused on the one who is standing on the altar, and not on ourselves, because we are not coming up to become gods. Coming here to become servants of gods. So and then the food changes, the language changes, the attire changes. In this way things change. Gradually it internalizes. Now this food is external, the tongue is external, the dress is external. Gradually as we go on, it goes, Krishna consciousness goes from out to in. It goes from out to in. Right? But as that process is taking place, as we become more connected through the vidhi, through the process, right? We must also start the process from within, without. If we only allow things to remain external for a long time, then we will remain on the superficial platform of bhakti. The ocean really has oysters only at its floor, at the depth of the ocean. At the superficial level, you get only fishes. So if we remain at the platform of superficial bhakti, we get only fishes. We don't get the oyster. And the money, Krishna money, is at the depth. So we have to go deep into Krishna consciousness, deep into the change of heart. And so then it has to start from within as well. And at some point, the in and the out become, they become one. There is no more in and there is no more out, it's all one. That means your soul, your desires, your thoughts, your perceptions, your action, your words, your deeds, everything comes in one line. That is the perfection of yoga. The alignment of body, mind and soul is perfection of yoga and not the exercise part alone, which is a means towards aligning the body with the mind and the soul. Right? So that's what we are looking for, and therefore the word, phrase here, change of heart, is very significant. What is the heart? Well, it's a fleshy organ weighing 280 grams in females and 340 grams roughly in males, size of a fist. Well, that's the biological heart. But when the change of heart means the seat of consciousness, the seat of consciousness, that's where the consciousness sort of sits. Like everything has to sit somewhere, like I'm sitting on this place, you're sitting there, everyone is sitting somewhere. The soul also has to sit somewhere. The soul sits in the region of the heart. And the soul, since the soul is the source of consciousness, it is the seat of the human consciousness. So the seat of consciousness is the heart. So in that sense, wherever the soul is, becomes the heart. Even though the blade of grass may not have a heart, and you know, maybe the amoeba has obviously no heart, but where the soul sits becomes the heart of that particular living entity. So that heart, so when we say change of heart, what does it really mean? What does it really mean? I want to have a change of heart. Is it a heart transplant? You take out your heart and put anybody else, change the heart. Yeah, they do that, right? They put mechanical hearts into the body for people who have had heart failures and you know, pumping is very poor, etc., etc., right? The change of heart actually is the innermost part of our existence. The heart is a deep organ. It's a very deep organ. Right? It's a very protected organ. It's within the chest, covered by strong, powerful ribs, with a strong pectoral muscles, and a thick skin. It's deep inside. So even if you hit the chest, it won't hit you. It won't hit the heart. Right? because it is a protected organ, it's a deep organ. So when any infection in the body hits the heart, infection, urinary infection, throat infection, ear infection, you know, eye infection, but the bacteria starts moving around from the kidneys and into the, you know, so and so, it goes into the heart. Endocarditis. It's a serious infection. Because it has gone deep into the very source of your life. That's where the blood is being pumped to every organ of your body. Every organ is vitalized by the heart. So when the vital organ like the heart or the brain is hit, it creates disaster in the body. Right? So therefore when we say change of heart means we are talking about the innermost recesses of our very existence. That means it is nothing superficial. That means superficiality eliminated. Right? So what is at the depth of our heart? The depth of our heart is the innermost motivations. The innermost driving force of our desires. Those things are at the level of the heart. The consciousness, which is essentially spiritual, because it is coming from the soul, really cannot do much in the material world because in the world of matter, what can it really do? A spiritual soul in a material world is a mismatch. It's a gross mismatch there, right? But the material energy of the body is activated. The whole body works to do so many things simply because it is triggered by the force of desire. It is a desire which actually activates all that happens thereafter through the human body. Right? So when it's a change of heart, we're looking for the innermost change of our consciousness in its ability to desire. And that actually is meant by what is our real motivation. Indra is sitting in the heavenly abodes. Royal place, full of opulences, full of beautiful damsels and inimaginable, you know, glory and grandeur and pomp and such facilities which is only deserved by the king of heavens. But when he sees at Badrinath two people meditating, Nara and Narayan, problem. Why are they meditating so severely? Why are they doing this? Why are they sitting in tapasya for such a long time? There is perception. What is the perception of Indra when he looks at Badri Vishal? Perception is threat. Here is a threat for me. Because it is through tapasya that people rise to heavenly abodes. Because they get piety, they get the power of merit, yoga siddhis. And that will be sufficient enough to dethrone me from a position. We may think this is a, you know, it's a serious thing. A serious thing. We may think, oh, Indra is such a fool. Indra is not a fool. We are fools. It's a serious problem for Indra. And his anxieties are not unbased and unrealistic. It's a fact that yogis can dethrone Indra by the power of their yoga siddhis. They can become more powerful than Indra also. So for him it is a serious problem when he finds that somebody is becoming so meritorious through yoga. Perception. So the word the purport uses further down here, which is also very significant, is this pure love is the only goal of a sincere Vaishnava. And therefore he must be vigilant to resist natural temptations of profit, adoration, distinction. The word that stands out here is the word vigilance. Right, you have police vigilance. Who is doing something wrong here? Police keeps on moving around. You know, in the night, even if it's the night, we don't know. We are all sleeping, but there are police patrols are going on all over the city. in jeeps, they move around in their own vehicles, they move around in anybody loitering around, everyone looks suspicious, anybody is not smoking or anyone is doing something crazy. They are very vigilant. In the body there is immune vigilance. Any small bacteria, any some foreign material, any cancerous cell developing, immune vigilance. So, huge immune system is there. So whether it's on universal level or the body level, vigilance is there. Right? So we're talking about consciousness vigilance. What are we talking about right now? We're talking about consciousness vigilance. What's happening within the realm of my consciousness? So it is a human intelligence which is a vigilance factor. Because the vigilance factor has the power of discrimination. Is this desire commensurate with my desire of my ultimate good in life? Then promote it, welcome it, allow it to grow. Is this desire, is this motivation going to be unfavorable, anukulena, pratikulena? It has to be eliminated. Right? So for Indra, the problem is that for him, his innermost desire is still not purely to serve Krishna. Because they're so mixed. The desires, when you say mixed means what? God and me. For the materialist, it's me. For the pure devotee, it is God. And for mixed devotee like ourselves, most of the time it is God and me. Is this good for God and me also? Right? In one sense, it's a little bit of change, definitely. When we are karmis, we think only of what is good for me. When you come into bhakti, we think of God and me. But then that me part has to go out, and only what has to remain? Only God has to remain. Krishna has to remain. That. So Indra is in that very strong position of God and me. Some of the God part is powerful, some of the me part is powerful. Right? In Indra's case, the me part is very extremely powerful. Right? So when that happens, when the me part becomes very strong, then he decides to do something which is very terrible. He wants to destroy Narayan Rishi. Not physically, but he wants to destroy their consciousness by getting them to lose and get distracted from the yoga siddhi process and to get involved into sensual activity. Right? So then, the vigilance factor means we have to always vigilance of four things. Our motivations, our desires, our thoughts, and our perceptions. These four constitute the vigilance factor of the intelligence. When we go through any phenomena of this world, when you talk to somebody, we react to somebody, you eat something, you do something, whatever you are doing, every activity, physical or subtle or gross, if we can be vigilance, that means we are going to really minutely observe. Now vigilance is not just some gross, vigilance means almost like a microscopic thing. You're vigilant about every small detail of what's happening in your realm of consciousness. That's a type of what they call as introspection required. Because generally we are very, very Bahir Mukha, right? The problem with this is that in the Bahir Mukha consciousness, because we are so externally oriented people, so we say, how is he dressed? How am I dressed? How is he eating? What is he eating? What is he doing? See what she is doing? What is this? This? What is this? What? We just know everything is just Bahir, 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 Bahir. You know, even Krishna, you know, Krishna is outside in the deity form. You know, Krishna is there, and this is that, this is that. It's, everything is Bahir. And Krishna also is outside. Everything is outside. We are, the whole world of reality for us is outside. Huh? But actually for the, what they call introspective sage, this is a phrase which Krishna uses in the Bhagavad Gita, right? He has to realize that there's a whole world inside. The inner world, right? The book is called as The Journey Within, right? That means if it is within that, and if it is a journey, that means it is going to, it's a journey. It's not going to be just, oh, you turn inside. Okay, just turn inside. Okay, just within. Look inside. Look in. But looking inside is going to be a journey. And a journey is a journey. That means you have to, you know, sit in a train or a flight or take your baggages, and it's going to be a travel, you know, from here to America, 18 hours, to Australia, maybe so many hours, to Qatar, say enough hours, wherever. It's going to be a journey. Right? So then looking within is going to be a journey, and that requires practice. That requires practice. That doesn't come easy. Right? So what we are being impelled to do, my dear friends, what we are being impelled to do through this powerful shlokas is, through this purports, is to really challenge. It says here the word challenge. This is a formidable challenge. That's very another important word. Now this is not going to be easy for us. Chanting Hare Krishna is relatively easy. 16 rounds is, well, fairly easy. We have a difficult time sometimes. Our rounds linger till late night. It's true. But it's not so difficult as yet in Kali Yuga. Maybe it will become more difficult as time goes by. If it was 64 rounds, it would be very difficult. Prabhupada's time, 64 rounds. 8 hours, you know, what am I going to eat? What am I going to make in my job? 16 hours is just enough, you know, to keep us going, sort of, you know, the bare minimum. Like Prabhupada made it like that. But it's going to be a formidable challenge nonetheless. It's a formidable challenge. Huh? Why? Because it says here, we have a natural temptation, natural inclination towards sense gratification. Now this word natural, what comes to my mind oftentimes, is the tail of a dog. So in Hindi also they say this has come from the Bhagavatam. This is Srimad Bhagavatam coming to routine language. Kutte ki pooch. Right? The tail of an Indian dog, other dogs are usually have some tongues have straight tongue tails also I have seen. But the Indian dogs, all the Indian breeds, they have a curved tail. Right? All of us have seen dogs. You won't find any Indian breed having a straight tail. Right? You make it straight. You keep it straight for 1 hour. And next thing, you hold it straight for 5 hours. For 5 days. Okay, the dog won't allow you, of course, to do that. That's another thing. But even if you just tight jacket him, you know, and put him into a straight tail for 5 days, 5 months, 5 years. You give him food there only, you do everything there only. 5 years, the tail is still like that. And the 5 year and the first second took. It will become a tail. The tail of a dog is always curved. And that so beautifully explains the state of human consciousness. It's such a simple observation of the Bhagavatam sages for the life of this of a materialism. And we need to identify ourselves with that phenomena. That our consciousness, my consciousness, definitely. We've been chanting Hare Krishna for a while now. It's not been just yesterday that we started chanting Hare Krishna. We've been chanting Hare Krishna for a while. And we have got connected with bhakti. We have gone on the altar. We have done aartis. We have gone to so many dhams. And we have had tons of prasadam and good several liters of charanamrit by now. And other things we have done. But has the tail become straight now? My consciousness is still like the tail of a dog. It still has a natural curve to curve towards sense gratification. It seems to be happening all the time. And it's sometimes quite disgusting. That even when the prasadam, when the mahaprasadam is there, mahaprasadam, we know mahaprasadam, we heard glories of mahaprasadam. Mahaprasadam is so special, and it's Mahavishnu, you know, that the whole story of Mahavishnu we heard, that it was, you know, some mahaprasadam was there in the tongue, in the nails of Narad Muni, and Lord Shiva said, "What nonsense, you know, you didn't give me mahaprasad. You're supposed to be my brother also. And you had the whole prasad yourself, what is this?" So then Narada removes something from his nails and gives it to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva goes completely crazy. And Shiva goes crazy. You know, he is a destructive force of this world. Right? The embodiment of Tamaguna. Guna avatar. Right? Not the embodiment of Tamaguna. He is the caretaker of the Tamaguna. So when he goes completely crazy and wild, right? He starts dancing. And the dance is Tandav. And Tandav is a dance of destruction. So when he had the Mahaprasad of Mahavishnu, he goes into a complete craziness and he danced with such intensity
the universe started shaking. And the universe started dipping down. And the hood of Anantashesha started dipping down. And it touched Kurma Avatar, who was holding. And Kona was wondering, how is this hood of the Anantashesha come down? That's what happened. Now we have heard all the stories, right? That this is the glory of Mahaprasad. But when we have the Mahaprasad plate in front of us, and you know, devotees are very special. They mix the dal, the roti, the sweet, and the whole thing together. And suppose kya chahiye aapko? And you try to figure out which is the part which you like. And if he has done, if he has put something little different there and some sweet, Buji, o rasgulla hai na? Thoda sa de to. And if the karela is there or the roti is there, right? So even there, in Mahaprasad, it is still sense gratification. What to do, right? So when we hear so much, it is Mahaprasad. So in everything, the sense gratification element seems to still be a big deterrent, right? Everything we do it for name and fame, sometimes for position. Oh, why did he get initiation? Why did I not get initiation? Why was he made a counselor? I came to deep bhakti before him. And he was made into a counselor. These people are all very, you know, they are all they have some politics here. he is the preacher's favorite, you know. So, usko recommend kiya. Our mind goes crazy. Even when we come to the realm of bhakti, we carry this huge baggage from the material world and we start sense gratification. Why I was in the position of being a counselor? Right? So we seem to get locked up with this obstacle, roadblock of sense gratification at every point, even in the realm of bhakti. And we need to detect those weeds. Which are those weeds which are sense gratification weeds in the path of bhakti. How I am judging all bhakti through that. And therefore, we need to pray for this, what they call a change of heart. That how my heart can change from within. Like you see, for example, Ramchandra Puri, right? Now again, he had the same problem, like Indra. His heart was not situated in bhakti. His heart was situated in criticism. Right? So his perception was, if there are ants walking in the home of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then his sensual perception tells him, if there are ants here, where do ants come? When there are sweets. And why there are sweets here? Because someone is eating them. And who's living in this room? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That means he must be, he made this like a logic for him. Ants is equal to food, is equal to eating, is equal to the person, is equal to the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He made the whole backward journey and said, this ant and this person, they are connected. He made this connection between the ant and the person. The person is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He must be eating sweets in secret. And he started criticizing. Imagine criticizing a sannyasi. Of course, he had the audacity to do that because he was elder to him in age, in seniority, because he was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So in that sense, he's senior to Mahaprabhu Chaitanya. He said, oh, this young sannyasi, he's a sense gratifier. So that perception, now this is there in the holy scriptures, not because it was a funny story, which we can laugh over. Right? It's a serious story that even a sannyasi, a renunciant, has not renounced the tendency to criticize. He's renounced external world, he renounces you know, external garb, and he's wearing obviously a sannyasi's clothes, maybe having a staff in his hand, a sannyasi staff, but he's not renounced the tendency to criticize. So that story is significant that even you elevate yourself to the level of sannyas, right, you have not given up your dog tail mentality of being critical. Right? So then, of course, the way Mahaprabhu reacts is beautiful. It's beautiful. So then how do we go about changing this heart? There is only one way to do it. There aren't many, many ways of doing it. Luckily. There's only one way of doing it. To genuinely develop the desire to be selfless servants. That is the only singular process which we must take deep into our heart. That every activity we perform in this world, every activity, it means yad karoshi. Yad karoshi means every activity. Jo bhi karte hain. Now the activity could be studying, could be mothering, could be parenting, could be, you know, business activity, could be distribution of books, could be any activity you can think of. There can millions of activities can be performed. Typing, anything. Yat karoshi. Yat karoshi means anything. Jo bhi karte hain. That every activity, if it is tagged on with this state of consciousness, this is to serve. Now that activity to serve is actually, even though it says here, we have a natural inclination for sense gratification, we talked about it in some detail, giving the dog example, right? It is still actually unnatural. Because it is not the soul's nature to perform sense gratification. Then what this purport says here, sense gratification is a self-destructive habit. Now, as you know, as doctors, sometimes, you know, if you go to the hospital, you fill up the forms before you go to meet the doctor, they will give you a form and say, habits, your name, sex, where do you stay, blah, blah, email, ID, blah, blah. Say, habits. So they say, smoking, you tick mark. It's how much? 10 cigarettes. Alcohol, you tick mark. This much, right? So you have habits. You tick or cross depending on what you are doing, right? But here, now those are considered as physical self-destructive habits, right? But this purport is so beautiful because it tells us that sense gratification itself is a self-destructive habit. Now, just the word self doesn't mean the body. The self means the real self, the Atma. Sense gratification is a self-destructive habit. That's why this purport is so beautiful. Because every line there is so meaningful. And it's an habit. Now, the problem with sense gratification is that the moment you do that, it's not that, oh, is you're done and then you're done with it. Okay, you're just done with it. Just get done with it. As people say, you don't think about it, just get done with it. You're thinking about it so many times, just do it and get finish it off, yaar. Why are you just, you know, harboring? Do it, finish it, do it, finish it. It is not so easy. If finishing it off by doing it was so easy, it would have been so nice. You do it, finish it, it's done, then the next thing. The moment we do that, it is the seed for the next event of sense gratification. It's called as proclivity. Pro means before. Proactive and proactive. So there is activity and there is proclivity. So proclivity is what happens before the activity. So activity means you perform activity of sense gratification and that is based on some proclivity. And the proclivity is, the seed of proclivity is the previous act of sense gratification. So every peg of alcohol you had, you think, I just get it, just drink it, finish it off here. The moment you had that alcohol, it was a seed for the next glass. Right? And the next glass was the seed for the next glass. And the glasses keep become bigger in sizes. They become small. You know that we must have, you know, you drink 10 pegs and 8 pegs and 2 pegs and I say boring. Forget. It keeps on increasing. So the moment you add more gasoline, the fire for sense gratification increases further. So the more we disrespect, the more we do sense gratification, the more we really do that, the more actually we increasing this proclivity for sense gratification. So therefore, let us go from the roots. We'll end with an example here. When you go to Wada next time, you will see a tree. We were there yesterday for the beautiful event of Govardhan installation. Just next to the Yamuna River is a tree. The tree has dried up completely. So look from a little distance on the Chabutra of Madan Mohan, for example. Right? You see everything green in Wada. Everything, every tree is lush, green, beautiful, nice shades of green, fern trees, these trees, large leaves, small leaves, pointed leaves, pokey leaves, different types of landscaping is done, so beautiful. Right? But one tree will stand out. It's a dried up, dead tree. It's a good sized tree to go unnoticed. And the question comes, why is there, and it is flowing next to Jamuna. That means there's water below. How can the tree become, that means it's not dried up because of lack of water. And if every tree is in the ground is getting nourished with, you know, good fertilizing soil, blah, blah, water, then how this one singular tree in the entire property is completely dried up next to a reservoir of water? Question was very natural to ask. So we asked these devotees, why this tree is dried up? So, like there was some tree was here, tamal tree or some tree was here down below in this compound. And they used to put clove water into it after it was mahapani, it was offered. The clove water was supposed to be like, clove is too intense for the roots. So we felt maybe they were putting clove water unknowingly. So that tree also, the roots got burnt off with the clove. He said, no, it's not clove water. There is a particular type of insect, a kida, I call it kida. That insect stays in the roots. It's one insect. That one insect just goes to the one of the roots and it has such power, such potency that one, that particular pest can suck off the entire life force of the entire tree. And the whole tree becomes dried up. One kida. Right? I said, how did you know this? I said, the local farmers inform us that this is such a powerful. I said, what if this bug starts spreading around? So then they will be able to identify. So this is a poison in the root. Right? So we can take the analogy in the positive sense that our roots for sense gratification are deep within the soil of our consciousness. We have performed sense gratification for God knows how many millions and millions and millions of lifetimes now. So it is absolutely now natural to do that again and again for the next several millions of lifetimes further. It's just natural. We've been doing that for such a long time, so we'll be doing it for the next several generations, several... It's just the way I have become. Right? What's unnatural about that? But unless you plant this so-called poison of the desire to serve, the desire to serve is so immensely powerful as against the desire for exploitation and self-enjoyment. The desire to serve is extremely powerful paradigm shift in consciousness. And that acts as such a powerful bug. It can dry up and suck away the vitality of the entire tree of sense gratification. Right? So this is that what we want to implant into our consciousness. No matter what we do, therefore when Saraswati Thakur, our beloved Grand Guru Maharaj, when he would meet people, he would, his first words would be to greet them, says, Dasosmi. It's such a beautiful word. The most beautiful word practically for a devotee could be this. Right? For the non-devotee it is I did this and I did that. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. So the whole I just completely occludes his consciousness because he cannot think of anything beyond I and mine. The entire sky of his consciousness is covered with that I and mine phenomena. But for a devotee, the most beautiful word which he can cherish is Dasosmi. I am your servant. And if that's what he just say it and he feels it, and he incorporates that into his consciousness, but latching on to that word, if they just latch on to that word, like you tag something, right? You tag your bag, you know, whatever, you know, all bags look on the conveyor belt the same, and you sometimes come out on the airport, they all look brown, they all look, so you have a tag, this tag, that is my bag, that's my bag, right? So you have to tag something to make it uniquely different. So you tag this one word, to your consciousness, to our consciousness. Dasosmi. Right? And that was the realization of Pratapbuddha Maharaj. He didn't carry the tag of the king of Odisha. When he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Balagandi, and after serving him with singing Gita Govinda, and giving immense joy to the heart of Mahaprabhu Chaitanya, he said, "Who are you? Who are you? You give me such joy." The question was very philosophical also. Who are you? He said, "Who am I?" Right? So he said, "Who are you?" So he could have said so many things, that I am the king of Pratapudra, but I have come to serve you in this ordinary dress because my Guru Maharaj told me to come in this ordinary dress. So, you know, I have come in the dress of a mendicant. That is, Saram Bhattacharya told me to do this. His answer was very perfect. Absolutely perfect. And without any false pretense. I am the servant of the servant of your servant. And it is my desire that you accept me as the servant of the servant of your servant. Having said that, it's so profound, genuine humility which came from his heart. There was a change of heart, not just a change of dress of a mendicant. There was a change of heart accompanying that change of dress. So there was alignment. When he said that, Mahaprabhu, being the Lord in the heart, could detect that is genuine. And having not given his mercy for such a long time because he had this tag of a king. So the king, and there's a tag to the king. The tag was king, Maharaj, Maharaj Padabhuta. The tag was that. Mahaprabhu did not want to have anything with those people who have that tag. But when he tagged himself with this word, Dasosmi, he received Mahaprabhu's beautiful, heartfelt embrace. So if you want to be embraced by the Lord, in the previous verse it is said, the material energy embraces the Jivatma, just yesterday's verse. Right? And when she embraces us, or rather we embrace her, right, then you get her qualities. But then we embrace Krishna, or Krishna embraces us. And when will he do that? He will embrace only those souls. He doesn't embrace anybody and everybody. Krishna is a very selective person. Very selective. Krishna embraces only those souls who tag their consciousness with this one beautiful word. Dasosmi. When he sees that tag, Krishna gets attracted. The all attractive gets attracted to that one word, to that one state of consciousness. And that's our change of heart. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hari Bhagavan.